So this evening, it's our lunar observance night. We've just had the Thai New Year Songkran festival on Sunday, along with the bhikkhu ordination, and our life continues on. Our cycles of cycles, patterns in our life, the different occasions, festivals or special occasions, like the New Year and the ordination, but our lunar observance night, Saturday nights, coming together and reflecting on Dhamma, practicing together, the sharing the space, sharing Dhamma. And I think this evening, as a reflection, just to share some of my own ponderings and reflections that have been coming up for me very recently, and probably still, under the impetus and from the winter retreat of that theme back to basics, and I think it's still returning, sort of to basics, to fundamentals, and I think it's a really important thing to be doing, to be returning to this fundamentals of, what is the path, what is the practice. We can be overly obsessed with the goal. I mean, we do have to understand what the goal is, but we can be overly obsessed with the goal, either striving or worrying or whatever. But when the goal is, say, nibbana, or freedom from suffering, then the way that the Buddha taught is, paying attention much more to the practice and the path of practice. And in the same way that if one is coming to a Bhaiagiri, or if we're going somewhere, trying to go to the Grand Canyon or go to Lake Tahoe, you actually don't have to think too much. You set your intention, but you got to pay attention to how you get there, rather than paying attention or obsessing over the goal or the destination. So certainly one of the fundamental and the teachings and tools that the Buddha gave is concerning mindfulness. And there is a certain, I think particularly in the English language these days, when it's the use of the word mindfulness is almost trite, not really, or just very prosaic somehow. It doesn't really capture the kind of the import of it, but certainly the way that the importance that the Buddha himself placed on it, and of course in the subsequent traditions, and particularly the meditation and practice traditions, that emphasis on the centrality of mindfulness is really important to understand, because the Buddha starts his discourse on the Satipatthana, the foundations of mindfulness or the establishings of mindfulness, as the because there are four foundations. What are the four? What is this? And the Buddha saying this is the direct path to for the purification of beings. It is the for like a direct path for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and distress, for the attainment of the right method, for the realization of Nibbana. So it's a very powerful statement. And so that you start realizing, well, mindfulness is got to have a lot more nuance than just some sort of bare awareness or choiceless knowing or something. There's a lot more nuance and depth, texture to it. So that too. And actually that something that say Beth's book More Than Mindfulness is actually really really important. It's quite I think it's a good contribution to the fleshing out the presentation of the perspective of what mindfulness is, or could be, or should be. So just reflecting on these, how do we cultivate it? How do you develop? How do we hold it? What are we using it for? As I said, this for satipatthana, and you can just as it's foundations of mindfulness. It's a body, feeling, mind, and dhammas, objects of mind, objects. But it certainly is appropriate to hold it, using these different foundations as a base of where we direct our mindfulness, hold our mindfulness, is an aspect of it. But I think also there's a sense of these establishings of mindfulness, or how Ajahn Jeff translates it as the frame of reference, because we use these frames of reference, so the foundations of body, feeling, mind, in terms of the moods of the mind, and the dhammas as the objects of the mind, as a frame of reference to be, as a lens of viewing our experience, so that we can really see clearly and cultivate an aspect of an experience of clarity, but also an experience of letting go, of relinquishment, of dispassion, disenchantment. It's such a important quality that it needs to or should be elicited in order to really grow on this path, and so that this establishing of mindfulness. And it's a way of seeing, a way of viewing, a way of experiencing the things around us, and so that we can experience a settling and dispassion, relinquishment. Thinking of the stories of even the Buddha himself. Being harassed by Mara, Mara being the personification of of things which obstruct and hinder or create complications, or you know, if one is comfortable with him being, I mean, he's the depicted as the, you know, the lord of the highest sphere of sensuality, the highest deva realm, and he's trying to keep beings within his sphere of influence. I mean, it's similar to the Christian depiction of Lucifer, Lucifer is a bright being. But even if we take it as a personification of an inner quality, it still works. So that even there's, you know, scenarios of the Buddha being hassled by Mara, and the Buddha's way of dealing with it is this, you know, it's kind of brief. It's like I see you, Mara. I know, as I see you, Mara. I know you, Mara. So it's not just a cursory glimpse. It's a penetration. So it's a real, I mean, this is, and of course it doesn't sort of say, well, it might, but the Buddha would have been mindful. And this observing something with clarity an inclination to disenchantment and relinquishment. That is the power of this mindfulness practice. So this developing of our mindfulness is not just sort of it is a foundational practice, but it's a foundational practice that takes us to liberation, the direct path to the purification of beings. It's a very powerful, powerful statement to the realization of Nibbana. So that really attending to the ways in which we cultivate that mindfulness, and also that you know, there is a in particularly, I think, in the commentarial literature, there is a dichotomy between, or a split, as if there is a, you know, kinds of practice, like the there's mindfulness practice, and then there's samadhi practice, so that they're as if they're two different things, and you know, I think it's really a false dichotomy, and certainly Ajahn Chah, in his teachings, I mean, he put tremendous emphasis on that cultivation of mindfulness, but mindfulness was always in the employ of samadhi, in the sense of, say, collectedness, or in the Thai translation of what samadhi is the firm establishing of the mind, so that the mind becomes firmly established when it is, there's a continuity of mindfulness and a clear awareness. So it's that attending to mindfulness, also its effect, its result is a settling of the mind, a collecting of the mind. Because sometimes we try so hard to, you know, get our samadhi together and make our mind shut up and obey. You know, it's not, you know, just it, it uh, But it's not very mindful. And just reflecting, I was thinking of there's a discourse where the Buddha talks of the development of samadhi, and it's Sanguttara 4s, and it's these four developments of samadhi, and it's what it leads to. And so that samadhi leading to a pleasant abiding here and now, and that's and which is a development of the settling of the mind. But these are, to me, they're also. That's not exclusive to samadhi. To me, it sort of applies to the cultivation of mindfulness. These four developments of samadhi are also the developments of mindfulness. So that one leading to a pleasurable abiding, pleasant abiding in the here and now. And so that, and certainly when the mind settles and becomes still, you have to, it's not just samadhi, you have to really rely on the mind to be alert and present and mindful. And one can direct one's attention to that and delight in that result. The second was is leading to knowledge and vision, which certainly in terms of the fruits of the heightened mind, the adijitta, then there are very special knowledges and understandings that come through that. But again, it's not that to me it's not exclusive to the attainments of higher samadhi, but also with that continuity and clarity of mindfulness, one sees and understands things as they truly are, you can build on that. The third thing in development of samadhi is for the leading to mindfulness and alertness, sati sampajanya, so that the cultivation, development, and say successful cultivation of samadhi practice should be leading to mindfulness and clear comprehension. So the opposite is also true, in the sense that this, as we attend to, because that's one of the aspects of the cultivation of mindfulness in the Satipatthana, is that cultivation of clear comprehension and satyasambhajanya. So there's a power of clarity that continues into whatever we're doing, and there's also in that use of the sampajanya as a quality that one is focusing on, the visuddhimagga equates it with wisdom. Mindfulness and clear comprehension is a wisdom factor, and so there is discernment, clear discernment there. But the last quality that in terms of the development of samadhi is for the freedom from the asavas, the overcoming of the asavas, the underlying tendencies of mind, and that And that always is that relinquishing of the letting go of the underlying tendencies of the mind, our doorway into awakening. And so that, to me, that's a yes, of course, that is a function of and a goal of samadhi, but it's a function and goal of mindfulness as well. So that these work together, and these asavas are the it's actually just in the ordination chant that's that is a part of the instruction that I give to the as a preceptor that I give to the newly ordained bhikkhu, that the the development of the of wisdom, or the perfection of wisdom, leads to the ending of the asavas, the gama asava, the underlying tendency toward sensuality, bhava asava, the underlying tendency to becoming, to being, becoming, and avijja, so the underlying tendency to avijja, or lack of true knowledge, or ignorance being clouded and being obstructed. So that the ability to really, they have to be seen clearly. And that is attuning the mindfulness to, there's, enjoy the pleasant abiding here and now, but also, how do we free our hearts from the asavas? How do we really free ourselves from the these underlying tendencies that keep returning to? And in, and that's certainly when those four foundations of mindfulness, or these four frames of reference, body, feeling, mind, the objects of mind. It's what is really, it has many, many functions, but the essence is around this. This is not mine. This is not me. This is not myself. I'm not to be identified with any of the experience. And it's not that it's not there. You're mindfully aware, you're alert, you're present, you realize this is body, this is feeling, this is mind, this is an object of mind. But one is recognizing that it's the entanglement of self-identification, and the identifying with that experience, and turning it into a story. Because that's that story of me is a very long and tangled story, that and it keeps circling around more suffering, and so that the in the Satipatthana Sutta, when the Buddha reviews each of the aspects of the Satipatthana. So I mean, there's a body, but it's also at the end of each aspect of for the body. Whether it's the same breath meditation, because that's what it begins with, is using the body and the breath as the basis for establishing attention, mindfulness, and then postures, clear comprehension, then the asubha, or the contemplations on the unattractive nature of the body, on the elements, on cemetery contemplations, on contemplation of death, at the end of each of those. And then with feeling, it's one thing in terms of the mindfulness of the mind, the cittanupassana, this one thing. And then on the dhammas, and it's the mindfulness of the of the hindrances, of the khandhas, of the sense bases, seven factors of awakening, four noble truths. But at the end of each one, and the Buddha says, is, and one's mindful of the body or whichever one. I'll just use body as a in and of itself, and in the terms of seeing internally, in and of itself, externally, in and of itself, in both internally and externally, so that there's a comprehensive experience and establishing of mindfulness and reflection. And again, this is not just a passive mindfulness, but there's a reflection. And it's like you're paying attention to the influence of the breath on the experience, and paying attention to what happens to the mind, and using it, the contemplation of unattractiveness. It tends to have a very cooling, settling, or at least it highlights, what is the habit? What's the underlying tendency? What do we do? So it's a learning. Again, it's not just a passive awareness. So internally, externally, both internally and externally, then paying attention to the origination of the body, the cessation of the body, the experience of the body, both the origination and cessation. That's paying attention to the, both in terms of, again, body, feeling, mind, the whole. And in terms of the condition process, because all that arises because of causes and conditions. And if we just get obsessed with a particular experience at any point in time, that's not the whole picture. We have to understand the causal nature of our experience. And through understanding that causal, you start, what's its trajectory? What's happened in the past? How is this going to play out? Where is this taking me? So that there's an understanding of that origination, of the cessation, of both the origination and cessation. And that is it's an important element of mindfulness practice, of satipatthana practice. And there is that turning of attention in a way that understands the causal nature of things, and not in a linear sense, but in a more maybe like a condition nature of things. And then the last part of that, the instruction that the Buddha gives, is to be aware that there is just the knowledge, establishing the awareness or sustaining the awareness to that's necessary for the samya. There is a body, and just to the in that, that's one is without getting caught in the attachment and clinging to the world. There's enough knowledge and awareness, and there's for knowledge and remembrance too, that one is, it dwells independent, clinging to nothing in the world. So that this non-clinging, and in other suttas or places, and this is pointed to as a atamiyata, the not made of that. And there's different ways of holding that, and there's different actual translations, like Ajahn Jeff translates it as non-fashioning. So that's sort of like not creating anything, not creating the world out of it. But also another translation is a non-identification. And both of those, I think, are important because one is more of a movement externally. One is a holding, how do we hold it inside? So both that non-creation of me and the world, because that's what our minds do. We're constantly creating through our likes and dislikes, our wanting or not wanting, what we think should be, what shouldn't be, and the whole story just keeps going on and on and on. And that's the whole point of a frame of reference that helps one cut through that proliferation. And, you know, to be able to cultivate that and develop that and attend closely to it is to me, is really the heart of the practice. I think of, that's another angle on, back to basics that we explored through the winter retreat. So anyway, those are some meandering thoughts on practice. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.